There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
We closed our last episode with a small introduction of Beverly Whibble, where I teased that she may have a connection to our first case, Paige Renkoski. They were both at Griffin Park prior to their attacks. Their cars had both been found running with their belongings inside, and they were both the same age. I discovered Beverly's murder case through a newspaper that mentioned this connection, but unfortunately, that source didn't have much to say about her murder beyond that. To make matters worse, scarcely anyone was talking about her at that time. I didn't want Beverly's tragedy to be lost or forgotten, so I told my group we would be turning our focus toward her as we moved forward. I started my search by digging up old newspapers from Canton Township around the time of her murder, but those provided very little information. Intent on learning more about Beverly, I filed a FOIA request with 5 different agencies, until one would respond with something useful. The 5th and final FOIA request was sent in on a Friday, with the expectation of an email response by Monday. Which is why I was surprised when, only 20 minutes later, my phone was ringing with an unknown but verified caller ID. A Superior Township officer had called to kindly inform me that for reasons he couldn't say, my request would go unfulfilled. Confused and frustrated after hitting wall after wall, I slumped in my chair and resolved to revisit this case after our first 3 episodes had been published. Then, 3 months later when we were finishing up our final batch of script edits, I found out that a suspect had been apprehended in connection to her case. Suddenly, the strange phone call made sense, and I approached the case with renewed resolve. That's the story we'll be telling today. The past, present, and future of a 35-year-old murder case.
On September 18, 1989, a woman's body was found on the side of the road. She had been sexually assaulted, shot, ran over, and abandoned. Later that night, her car was found near Griffin Park, still running with her purse still inside. In the time leading up to her murder, Beverly Whibble was going through a rough patch in her life. She was getting a divorce, trying to support herself, and navigating life with her new boyfriend, all while taking care of her 13-year-old son. Beverly was living on and off with her parents in Ann Arbor and her husband, Michael, at Holiday Estate Mobile Home Park in Canton, Michigan. However, about a month before the crime, Michael notified them because he wanted to take her and her son off the lease because they were getting a divorce. I don't think this was done with any ill intent because her sister, Annette Bradmeyer, said the divorce was civil and there was nothing bad between them. It wasn't messy or anything. Annette also told detectives that her sister had been dating someone new in the past 2 months, a man she believed to be in the mid-20s. She described him as an undesirable drug user and said that he, quote, did not live anywhere. Though we don't yet know its relevance to the victimology, it is worth noting that she had another relationship before Michael. There are no publicly available records, so all we really know is that this was the relationship her son, Dale, came from. A single newspaper described it as a marriage, but that would mean she was married at 17, and we have nothing to back that up. As for who was involved, how it started, when it ended, we really don't know. Then, in recent news coverage, her son clarified her situation by saying, quote, "There was stuff going on, though she was divorcing my dad at the time, and my grandma wouldn't let her bring her new boyfriend into the house, so she would stay out in her car with him, but she wasn't living in her car." Beverly was not employed at the time of her crime. Her last job was working as a maid at the Knights Inn in Canton, where she was employed for less than a month. However, when it comes to descriptions of her personality, an acquaintance and resident of the park where Beverly and her husband lived said that she was a very good mother, very pleasant, very mild. I'd have to say she was naive, but very easy to get along with. Furthermore, her sister described her as easygoing. She always gave that boy everything he wanted. She wasn't great at school, but she always had a lot of friends. At this point, you may have noticed that the majority of this information is being extrapolated from newspapers and quotes, and that is because the crime occurred for so long ago that we don't have a lot to pull from. So this preliminary profile is being established with all the information that is publicly available. In my opinion, all of this information points to the idea that Beverly was your normal everyday woman, but she had increased risk factors due to the huge changes that were happening in her life. Her daily life was likely ever-changing and turbulent. This exposes a vulnerability because a lack of structure makes it harder to notice things that are suspicious or inconsistent. Overall, I can point to only two overwhelming risk factors in her case. The first is that she was hanging around someone who's allegedly engaging in dangerous behaviors. The second, and arguably the most important, is the fact that she would occasionally stay in her car. You'll understand the reason why as we examine the details of the crime itself. The day started with Beverly dropping her son off at school at 8:30 a.m. When they parted, she told him that she didn't have enough gas to drive back to her mother's home, located in Washtenaw County, so she planned to sit in her car at Griffin Park and sleep. She never left that park. At least, her car never did.
A passing motorist reported that he saw a woman's body on Gottfredson Road, south of Fort Road. Washtenaw County Police responded to the call and found Beverly at 10:20 a.m. She was unconscious, but it has not been confirmed whether or not she was deceased at this point. In fact, up until they moved her body, they thought she was the victim of a hit and run, not a shooting. There were tire tracks on her legs, and they assumed the blood in her mouth was the result of being hit by a car. It was only once firefighters came to transport her to the hospital that they noticed two gunshot wounds. We have a quote from firefighter Ronald Smith, who responded to the scene, that states that she was shot in the armpit and the back of the head. Then, another article vaguely states that she had been shot in the mouth and the chest. It is unclear if these are four separate wounds, or if they correspond to the exit and entrance wounds of the same two gunshots. It is similarly unclear whether Beverly was deceased when she was found or if she died after being transported to the hospital, as detectives declined to say. At 8:20 p.m. that day, an officer responded to reports of a suspicious vehicle in the area of Griffin Park. The vehicle was running and unoccupied when it was found, with the driver's side door ajar. There was no blood in the car, but a purse and ID were found inside. This was how the car was traced back to Beverly Whipple, and why it was so important that she would sometimes hang out in her car. In all likelihood, the crime started when the perpetrator saw her and dragged her out of her car, so her decision to stay in Griffin Park put her directly in danger. It, of course, isn't her fault that this awful thing happened to her, but it is important to establish what exactly happened in order to trace it back to the killer. Was this a targeted attack, or was she a victim of opportunity in a public place? The final piece of evidence in this case is actually witness testimony from way back in 1989. David Kuntz testified that he heard a gunshot around 9:30 a.m. the morning of Beverly's death. He lived near Barry and Ford Roads, approximately 1.5 miles from where she was found. He said that the shot sounded very close. Then, as he was pulling in front of his house, he saw a car driving toward Ford Road. He described a man with collar-length brown hair who turned away as though he was hiding his face. He described the vehicle as blue with a white top, similar to a Chrysler New Yorker. This testimony helps us understand the case by clarifying the timeline and displaying more of the killer's behaviors. However, without the case file, autopsy, or talk screen, we can't know these things for sure. Just as with Beverly's victimology, there are a lot of unknowns for us. With that in mind, take the following offender profile with a grain of salt.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Beverly dropped her son off at 8:30, and the gunshot was heard around 9:30, which gives the killer a window of opportunity of just 1 hour with their victim, minus the 3 to 5 minutes it would take for her to drive to the park after dropping her son off. So we know Beverly had to have been abducted and murdered within that hour. Judging from the fact that her car was still running when she was found, it seems as though they abducted her on the earlier end of that time frame. Shaving off the time it took to drive from the park to the drop site, that leaves roughly 45 minutes of opportunity, or even less if they drove elsewhere to assault her. They did it quickly. There wasn't a lot of time for panic and hesitation. This suggests that they were a prior offender. Furthermore, there was no effort made to conceal her body. All they did was drive to a road where no one would see them. So as long as there wasn't a car driving by, they could drop off Beverly, shoot her, and then leave. This method is quick and impersonal, which suggests that, once again, they were a prior offender, and they had no personal connection with the victim. If they were worried that her body could be traced back to them, they would bury her or hide her in some way. So it was most likely that the offender was a stranger to her. Without crime scene photos, we are once again drawing conclusions based on public information. Looking at the car where she was abducted from, the vehicle was left running. The driver door was ajar, her purse was inside, and there was no blood in the car. With this information, two theories seem to form. The first possibility is that someone yanked her out of her car in the broad daylight. This theory points to a stranger, but it seems odd that someone would walk up to a random vehicle to abduct her. The second possibility is that she was actually in Canton Park to meet someone. She got out of the car, expected it to be quick, and that person abducted her. It could have been a friend or someone she had a transactional relationship with. The latter points immediately to a drug dealer, but I must stress that we have no proof of that. Without a talk screen or autopsy, we can't know if Beverly was under the influence. The only evidence towards this is circumstantial. Beverly was going through a lot of changes in the past few weeks, and her boyfriend was said to be a drug addict. On the flip side, this evidence wasn't brought up in any hearings or transcripts, so investigators truly may not have information pointing to drugs. I must stress that this is just a theory based on limited information.
There are very few theories as to what may have happened to Beverly, and her case remained cold for 30 years. That was until January 2024. There was DNA taken from the rape kit that was done on Wivel, and that DNA had been sent in for a forensic genealogy testing by Michigan State Police. Investigators took that DNA and it led them to a 69-year-old man named Buster Robbins. For several weeks after this, investigators surveyed his home, taking items they may use to get more DNA and information, such as plastic straws. His DNA from the straw was tested again to see if it was matched for the rape kit, and it did. Investigators moved forward by questioning him and his wife for information regarding the case. During the questioning, Robbins' wife told them that in 1989 he drove the same blue vehicle that a witness reported seeing just after the gunshot. They conducted a search on his house and found a .45 caliber magazine, which was the same as the gun that Beverly was shot with. Following this, when he was being formally interrogated, he was shown a picture of Beverly, and he told the interviewers that he hadn't recognized her. He also said that he hadn't recognized her name either. The next question he was asked was if he had ever been unfaithful to his wife, who he had been married to since 1974, to which he replied no. This was a direct contradiction to the results of the rape kit. The detective's incredulous reply was quoted, "If somebody was married for 50 years and had an affair, he would have remembered." So, when he was questioned about why his DNA was found in Wivel, he couldn't answer. This is why they arrested him.
While he was waiting in prison, the leading investigators began to try and connect him to other cold cases in the area, including Paige Rinkowski. The investigators said that they have not ruled out Robbins as a suspect. The timing of both these cases would match up, especially considering Robbins only lived about an hour from where Paige and Beverly were. Robbins also faced other allegations, one of which being multiple counts of criminal sexual conduct on his wife from other men. This included inviting other men into his home to have non-consensual sex with his wife. As of right now, this is an ongoing investigation. If Robbins is charged with CSC against his wife, he could potentially be carrying a life sentence. During a preliminary exam on March 18th, the defense attempted to make it seem like he was a family man and could not commit something this heinous. Many people were shocked to see Robbins in court because, in their eyes, he was a sweet grandfather who could never do anything like this. Beverly's son also showed up to court that day, and he had other thoughts on Robbins' innocence. He said, "That hurt the most, thinking that 35 years ago, he did this and then carried on with his life like nothing happened. I feel bad just thinking about what he had to go through that day finding out his mom had been murdered at just 13 years old." Robbins' bond was denied that day, and he was to be back at court at a later date. That following court date hurt her son even more. Even with DNA evidence, witness reports of his car, and a magazine of a matching caliber found in his house, the judge stated, "What I don't have is probable cause that the defendant caused the death, and for that reason, I will not bind the matter over." After the ruling, the judge also added that he believes there's more to the story than he knows. Her son said, "From what I understand, there's pretty damning evidence, and that it's pretty clear. But for me, until that guilty verdict is heard, it won't be done for me."
It's not every day that leads suddenly appear, especially in a case this old. I fully expected this new development to finally bring closure to her family, but unfortunately, justice hasn't been served yet. There are still questions left unanswered, like why Robbins did what he did and why the judge declined to send him to trial. The results of that hearing really stuck with me. Why not let a jury hear the case? It is the role of a jury to hear evidence and make a decision. And there was more than enough evidence against Robbins here. Unfortunately, the hope of this case moving forward is fading. Following his verdict, Judge Barr granted a stay to the case, and there was a status conference scheduled for April 8th. However, there have been no public updates in the following months. Just as when Beverly died, information is starting to dry up again. The public seems to be turning away, forgetting what happened to her, but we can't let that happen. Her case went cold for so long, it's not right to stop when justice is so close. Remember Beverly Wivel. Look for her in the news, in your local parks, and in the women in your family, because her tragedy could easily occur again. In the days following this recording, it was reported that Robbins was charged with Beverly's rape and murder. Additionally, he is under suspicion of possessing child pornography. With his bail being set at $5 million and this case moving to trial, it seems like Beverly will finally have justice. And maybe Paige too. Voiceless was researched, written, and produced by Gracie, Madison, Haley, Olivia, Asia, and Chloe. Intro music by Haley, all other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Olivia and Madison. The Underestimated Podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping to fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.
to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.